anyone have a church background in which during the worship services there was a children's sermon? Are you familiar with what I'm talking about, where boys and girls might gather around the person leading the lesson for the day? Well, those experiences often are some of the most interesting and sometimes the most meaningful parts of the services. One Sunday I was speaking in a church, and the person leading the children's sermon had all of the little boys and girls gathered around, and they were talking about Jesus as living water and how it's important that we drink him and have him satisfy our hearts. And so the teacher had a little picnic basket and talked about going on picnics, and sometimes people would take lemonade and they would take tea to the picnics. And so she asked the little boys and girls, "What do you like to take to picnics? Do you like to take lemonade? Do you like to take tea?" And several of them gave their answers. And then this one boy raised his hand and says, "My daddy takes beer. He likes to drink it a lot." And so everybody kind of, ooh, he's chairman of deacons. And so then the first Sunday of this month, I was speaking in a church. It was the first Sunday of Advent. I see you've got candles, and they were lighting the hope candle that day. The person leading the children's sermon was using Abraham as the basis for the talk about hope. And so she said, "Now, boys and girls, God made Abraham a promise that he was going to have a son. But Abraham was 75 years old at that time, and he did not have any children. And a year passed, 5 years passed, a decade passed, 20 years passed, 24 years passed, and Abraham still did not have a son, but he continued to hope. He continued to believe God, even though believing God was very hard." And she said, "Now, boys and girls, remember, Abraham was very, very, very old." And this young boy blurted out, "You mean like my mom?" Well, then the next week, in a church where I was speaking, the person leading the children's sermon was talking about Christmas and how important it was that Jesus came to earth. And then she asked the boys and girls who were gathered around, "Who is Jesus?" And a little boy named Ben said, "Jesus is the light of Christmas." And he is. He is the light who came into the world, who came into the darkness to show us who God is and how he wants us to live. But Jesus isn't just the light of Christmas. Jesus is the light of every day. He is the hope, the peace, the joy that we experience. And I want us to look at a statement that Jesus himself made to follow up on the theme of Christmas and lead into the new year. Would you look in your Bibles, please, with me to John chapter 8. I want us to look at this statement that Jesus made together. While you are turning there, I want to say that the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, and Luke are called the Synoptic Gospels. Now, when you hear the word optic, you know that that refers to your eye, something that you see. And so that part of the word is familiar to us, the Synoptic Gospels. And then the little prefix S-Y-N in front of that word, synoptic, you probably recognize that from the word synonym. A synonym is a word that means about the same as another word. So Matthew, Mark, and Luke are the Synoptic Gospels because in those three Gospels, you see about the same picture of Jesus. But John isn't called a synoptic gospel because his writing is more unique than the other three gospel writers combined. What I mean by that is that if you read the 21 chapters in the Gospel of John, you will see more passages unique to that one gospel than are unique to Matthew, Mark, and Luke combined. And so John wrote his gospel with more of a thematic approach. Rather than a chronological account of all that Jesus said and did, John described Jesus with a series of sayings, I am statements, and with a series of miracles, seven signs, to point to the sufficiency of Jesus. Well, one of those I am statements is one that Jesus made in John chapter 8. And I see that some of you have turned with me. Some of you, of course, have the Bible memorized and don't need to bring it. But for the less godly people who actually need to look into the Bible to know what it says, we're going to read together John chapter 8, verse 12. Jesus spoke to them again and said, I am the light of the world. Anyone who follows me will never walk in the darkness, but will have the light of life. Jesus said, I am the light of every day. Well, what does this verse say to us? What can we learn from this statement that Jesus made? Well, there are two parts of it that I want to try to cover in the next hour and a half or so. The first idea, I'm kidding about that. I know you've got a business meeting. In fact, I will slip out. I don't like to be a guest in business meetings, so I will greet you now and then let you fight later. The first part of the sentence is where Jesus said, I am the light of the world. Now, often when we think of light, we think of purity, we think of righteousness. Some people might have the word holiness comes to their mind. And certainly those ideas are applicable to Jesus. But the way that John used this theme of light is to say that Jesus has nothing hidden. The light exposes, the light shows things. And so when Jesus said, I am the light of the world, he said, I don't have a secret dark side that I hope that you don't discover. I don't have something that I'm keeping hidden because I don't want you to know it about me. We are not always people of light because we sometimes cover flaws and failures. We cover up parts of ourselves that we don't want others to see. And then little by little, when they discover those flaws or dark spots, then their opinion of us changes. Now, we know that that is true. Aren't there some people that the longer you have known them, the less you like them? Aren't there some people that when you first met them, you thought to yourself, oh, what a wonderful person. And now your relationship has degenerated to the point when you're pushing your shopping cart in the grocery store. Oops, she's on that row. And so you go over to the next row so that you don't even have to have any awkward conversation with her. That is because we are people who are not light. We have parts of our hearts that we shield from others. We have motives. We have actions. We have deeds that we do in secret. We have thoughts that we hope no one else hears. We speak words in one context that we never would share in a different setting. But Jesus said, I'm the light of the world. I don't have any of those dark places. I don't have anything that I'm hoping you do not discover. When I tell you that I am full of grace and truth, I really am. I'm not having to put up an act. I'm not having to put my best foot forward. I'm just being who I am. I am the light of the world. I don't have anything hidden about me that I hope that you do not discover. I'm the light. But then the second part of the verse is a direction to us. After Jesus announced something about himself and said, I am the light of the world, he said, and then for you, anyone who follows me will never walk in the darkness, but will have the light of life. He makes an appeal. He makes an invitation to us. Now, the Bible really is one story. There are 66 books written by about 40 different authors. But from the beginning of the book of Genesis all the way through to the last page of the book of the Revelation, the Bible really is one theme. It is God revealing himself to people in such a way that they may come to honor him as king and love him as father. It is the story of God rescuing people from their sins through the person of Jesus Christ, sending him to this earth to be born anonymously as a baby in Bethlehem, and then to carry out an agenda, completing all of the demands of the law. And then at the conclusion of everything else that his Father sent him to do, Jesus willingly laid down his life on a cross. Now, he told his disciples ahead of time. He said, men, one day my enemies are going to celebrate. They're going to pat each other on the back. They're going to congratulate each other because they will think that they have defeated me. They will think that when they are crucifying me, that they have won. But they are not killing me when they are carrying out this act. I will be laying down my life. And those perspectives are completely different. Jesus was not out-schemed by the Pharisees. He was not outwitted by Judas Iscariot. He was not overpowered by the Roman soldiers. They were parts of his plan to redeem, to rescue, to save sinners. Now, if that scene were the end of the story, we might remember Jesus as a man who made some good teachings and died for what he believed in, but that scene isn't the end. The Bible tells us that on the very first Easter Sunday morning, women went to the tomb where Jesus had been buried. The reason they went there is that on the day that Jesus died, they had not been able to clean up his body for permanent burial. They had been able to wipe off some of the blood and clean him a little, but not prepare his body for permanent burial. And so they arose early that Sunday morning to go to the tomb with their spices and other materials to have Jesus' body permanently laid to rest. Now, they knew that they had a big job ahead of them. In fact, even on the way to the tomb, they asked each other, how are we going to be able to roll away that stone? It took all of those Roman soldiers to get that stone in front of the doorway. How are we going to get that stone away to get inside? They knew they had a big job, so perhaps they got up early, ate a big breakfast. Of course, since it was Sunday, they could not go to Chick-fil-A. And they made their way to the tomb. And when they arrived, angels greeted them and asked, why are you here? If you were looking for dead people, you're in the wrong, or if you were looking for Jesus, you were in the wrong place. Cemeteries are for dead people, and Jesus is alive. And that Jesus, who is alive, made this statement as a promise to us who want to live. He said, anyone who follows me will never walk in the darkness, but will have the light of life. Jesus said, I am making an invitation. I am extending an invitation to you. You do not have to walk in the darkness. You can walk in the light of life. If you will surrender yourself to me, if you will repent of your sins, if you will in faith turn to me and acknowledge my lordship and put your faith not only in the fact that I died, was buried, and rose again, but in all that I say as the truth, then you will not walk in darkness. You'll have the light of life. But what does the idea that Jesus was teaching mean? Well, I really worked on this the past couple of weeks or so to try to figure out what's the difference in walking in darkness and walking in light. Well, first, walking in the darkness generally means walking in fear. Don't you have more fearful thoughts in the darkness than you do in the light? Aren't there some noises? Aren't there some things that you see or hear that might cause your heart to beat a little bit faster in the darkness that don't necessarily happen that way in the daytime? Has anyone here ever awakened in the middle of the night? Maybe you heard a noise in your home or when you awakened, you saw something and you became fearful. When I was a boy, one Saturday evening, I don't know what woke me up, perhaps a noise did, but when I woke up, I looked across my bedroom, and I'd stayed up really late this night. I mean, it was 7 o'clock or so before I went to bed, and I looked across the bedroom by the window, and I saw what I thought was a person. I may have been 8 or 9 years old at the time, and I wasn't sure what I needed to do. I legitimately thought when I looked across the room that a person had broken into our home and was standing there next to my window looking my direction. So I did not know if I should scream and wake up my mom and dad and my brother, wake up everyone in the house, and maybe that would scare him away. But I also thought, what if that means he harms us? What if that means, oh, they know that I'm here, and then he does something to injure us? And so I chose to remain still and quiet, thinking maybe he will just get what he wants and leave us all alone. Maybe he will get the whatever he wants to burglarize and will just leave us. Somehow, I drifted off to sleep. And then the next morning when I woke up, the sun was streaming through the window and my room all of a sudden was light and not dark. Do you know what the object was that I thought was a person? About a week prior, my mom and dad had bought a set of 4 Goodyear tires. And for the purchase of those 4 tires, the Goodyear store in West Point had given us an inflatable Goodyear blimp. And I had blown it up and had hung it on the wall there in my room. But that wasn't the issue, because I had seen the Goodyear blimp. I mean, it was probably this long or so. But on that Saturday, on the night before, or on the day before, the night when I awakened, we had been to a Mississippi State football game. And they were giving out pom-poms at the games. Cheerleaders were giving them particularly to the good-looking people, so I got a bunch of them. And when I came in, I took those pom-poms and I stuck them, rested them back behind the Goodyear blimp. And so when I awakened in the middle of the night, I saw the shape of the pom-poms and the Goodyear blimp hanging, and I thought it was a person. And I was terrified. I was breathing heavily. But the next morning when I awakened, I did not, oh, the Goodyear blimp. In fact, I laughed at myself, being fearful of what I saw in the darkness. Jesus said, if you follow me, you don't have to walk in the darkness of fear. I love this verse from the Old Testament that I think is appropriate here. Isaiah chapter 41, verse 10. Do not fear, for I am with you. Do not anxiously look about you, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. Surely I will help you. Surely I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. Jesus said, you don't have to walk in fear. He made that promise. Now, what Jesus did not promise was that we never would be in fearful circumstances. He never promised that the pathway always would be smooth and easy. He never said anyone who follows me will never even have any fearful circumstances around them. In fact, I think that verse from Isaiah indicates that exactly the opposite is true. The reason that we often look anxiously around us, around ourselves, is because we are in fearful circumstances. We are in situations which could cause anxiety and panic. But Jesus says, despite those circumstances, you do not have to walk in the fear of darkness. I think walking in darkness also means confusion. Have you ever been in a room? Maybe even you were familiar with the room, but because the room was dark, you were disoriented, you were confused, you weren't sure exactly which way to go. And that certainly is the case when we are in rooms with which we are not familiar. We stumble, we trip, we fall. Not this past summer, but the summer before last, I was speaking at a youth camp in Panama City Beach, Florida. And it just so happened that the same week of camp was when Mississippi State was playing in the College World Series in Omaha, Nebraska. And so that evening, I hoped to be able to watch a little bit of the baseball game. The schedule was going to be that we were going to eat dinner, and then we were going to have our worship service, and then the students were going to go into small groups for about an hour. And so I thought I would have about 45 minutes or so while the students were in their small groups and I did not have any responsibilities, that I might be able to watch an inning or two of the game. I left the hotel room to go down to eat. Then we had the service, and then when the service ended and the students dismissed to go to their small groups, I raced back upstairs to go to my room, pulled the key out of my pocket, slipped it in the door, and then ran full force into the room. As I ran into the room, I realized that I had made a mistake. When I had gone down to dinner, the sun still was out. I had the window shade open, and so the room was full of light. But in the time that had passed, when we had eaten dinner and then had the service, now the sun was down, and the room was completely dark. I had not left on any lights. I had not left on a lamp or the television, nothing at all. So the room, especially coming in from the lighted hallway, the room was completely dark. And so when I ran into the room, bow! Banged my foot right on the bed. Do you know why God created your toes? To find the furniture in the dark. Now, when that happened, I only thought happy thoughts. What a mighty God we serve. But it hurt badly. Do you know why I was injured? I was walking in darkness. I was confused. I wasn't sure of the orientation of the room. I had forgotten how far the bed was away from the door. But do you know the rest of the week when the light was on, I never bumped into the bed because I was walking in light. Jesus said, if you will follow me, I will guide you. You don't have to stumble along in confusion. You don't have to pull out your hair and say, I just don't know what I should do. He said, you don't have to walk in the darkness of confusion. You will have the light that guides you. You're familiar with Psalm 119, 105. Your word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. God says, I will show you the steps that you should take. Now, you may not be like me, but perhaps some of you are. What I want God to do for me is to show me how everything is going to turn out. I always like to know here at the beginning of the pathway, but what about way down there? God never promised that he would show us that part. He never told us at the beginning of the pathway that he would show us what it's going to be like at the end of the pathway. All he said, all he promised, was that he would show us the next step to take. When you look at that metaphor, your word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. Keep in mind that back in Bible times, they did not have the high-powered flashlights that we do today. Some of you may have a tiny little flashlight, and you can turn it on, and you could light up, you know, the first city in Arkansas that you come to across the Mississippi River because of how powerful the beams are and how far they show. But a lamp, a lantern, as a person were walking down a path with only light, just a little part ahead of him. And Jesus said, that's how I guide you. I'm not promising that I will tell you how the last page of the book ends. I will promise you what the next chapter is. And so, Jesus said, you don't have to walk in the darkness of fear. You don't have to walk in the darkness of confusion. But then I also, as I was brainstorming and thinking about this and reading through some commentaries, we don't have to walk in the darkness of evil. When we think of the contrast of light and darkness, in fact, John did talk about some of this earlier in John chapter 1, in fact, carried it over into the first epistle that he wrote, the letter of 1 John. When we think about the contrast in light and darkness, we think about the innermost parts of ourselves that we do want to cover, that we want to hide, that we don't want others to know. And the reason that we try to cover them is because we're embarrassed. We know that we should not be talking that way, that we should not be living that way. But Jesus said, you do not have to be who you are. And you do not have to do what you do. He said, I will give you light. I will let you walk in the light, in character and integrity. I will help you deal with those secret issues that continue to trip you up, the frustrating sins that you continue to commit. Jesus said, I will help you walk in light. You don't have to continue beating yourself up thinking, why can I not stop this? Oh, wretched man that I am, who is able to deliver me? Jesus Christ is. He is able to help us walk in the light and not in the darkness. Then there's one final idea that I think is important here. Jesus said, I am the light of the world. I don't have anything hidden. I haven't put up a curtain so that you cannot see back here, because I hope you don't discover these truths about me. He said, no, I'm the light of the world. Everything that you see, that's who I am. And that's who I always will be, because that's who I always have been. But you also benefit, Jesus said. If you follow me, you don't have to walk in the darkness. You don't have to walk in the darkness of fear or confusion. You don't have to walk in the darkness of evil. Nor do you have to walk in the paralysis of death. The darkest dark is death. The cold grave is the end in some philosophies, in some thinkings. But those of us who have a biblical worldview know that time on earth only is the ending of one chapter. We are spiritual beings with physical bodies, and once our time on earth is over, these physical bodies are of no need for where we are going. We will go on forever, which only makes the reality of life without Christ even more horrible. Jesus said, for those who know me, however, death is not an enemy to be feared. It is an enemy that has been conquered. He said, you do not have to look as your body ages and begins to stoop. You do not have to wonder as your body becomes riddled with disease, what is going to happen to me? He said, if you know me, you will walk on streets of gold. You will live with me forever. You will be surrounding the throne where you will worship me, where you will be fully alive. The darkest dark is death, but not in Jesus. In Jesus, death is simply closing our eyes here, and what the Apostle Paul said is the moment, the split second, that we are absent from this body, we are present with the Lord. I've done two funerals over the period from Thanksgiving to Christmas, both in West Point, my hometown. And any minister will tell you that preparing for and conducting a funeral service for a person who has trusted Jesus Christ as Savior is much different than preparing for a funeral and conducting it for those who haven't. We have no words of hope or comfort to offer, except an appeal to say, surrender your life to Christ. But for those who have trusted Christ, we offer the hope of heaven. We offer the hope, the comfort of knowing that we will be reunited, that we grieve, but not as those who do not know Christ. And so Jesus made this promise, you do not have to walk in the darkness of death. You can have the light of life. Jesus is the light of Christmas. He's the light who came into this world, but his mission did not stop on a night in Bethlehem in a manger. Jesus is the light of every single day of our lives, and he offers the appeal to us to say, you can walk this way. Now, I'm going to ask the musicians to come, and they're going to lead us in a closing song of commitment. And in just a moment when we sing together, I'm going to issue you two particular ways that you might want to respond. First, I don't ever assume that we are in a room of all Christian people. And so if there's anyone here, a man, a woman, a college student, teenager, boy, or girl, and you never have surrendered to Jesus, Then in just a moment, as we begin singing together, you can make your way down to the front. I will be standing here, and you can simply say, I have some questions about how to begin a relationship with God. I'll be glad to talk with you about the good news that Jesus brings us. I do recognize, however, that many of us in this room are professing followers of Christ. Perhaps someone would be here today and say, I'm really not experiencing the reality of walking in light. I'm paralyzed by fear. I'm really confused about a decision that I need to make, and I just don't know which way to go. I want my church family to pray for guidance. Maybe you're struggling with a secret sin or maybe an open sin. And you would say, I don't want to walk in the darkness of this evil. I want to walk on a different pathway, one of light. In whatever way God's Spirit speaks to you, I hope that you'll be obedient to that. I'm going to invite you to stand together, please. I'll be standing here at the front for any who comes as Jonathan leads us in our commitment song.
Thanks for listening to the weekly podcast for First Baptist Church of Greenwood, Mississippi. Historically rooted in the heart of downtown Greenwood, we desire to see God revitalize our community with the power of the gospel. As a church, we're striving to be a family of worshipers who proclaim Jesus here and everywhere. For more information on how you can get connected, visit our website at www.fpcgreenwood.org.